Ellen nodded absently. Some soldiers were clearing away the corpses, among them the six men that Vin had killed, including the one at the end. Ellen squeezed his eyes shut. What? Ham asked. Ellen opened his eyes, forming his hand into a fist to keep it from shaking. I know you've seen a lot of battles, Ham, he said, but I'm not used to them. I'm not used to... He turned away as the soldiers dragged away the headless body. Ham watched the corpse go. I've only actually seen her fight once before, you know, Ellen said quietly. In the palace, a year ago. She only threw a few men against the walls. It was nothing like this. Ham took a seat beside Ellen on the benches. She's mistborn, El. What did you expect? A single thug can easily take down 10 men, dozens if he has a coin shot to support him. A mistborn? Well, they're like an army in one person. Ellen nodded. I know, Ham. I know she killed the Lord Ruler. She's even told me how she faced several steel inquisitors. But I've just never seen... He closed his eyes again. The image of Vin stumbling toward him at the end, her beautiful white ball gown covered in the gore of a man she'd just killed with her forehead. She did it to protect me, he thought. But that doesn't make it any less disturbing. Maybe that even makes it a little more disturbing. He forced his eyes open. He couldn't afford to be distracted. He had to be strong. He was king. You think Straff sent them? Ellen asked. Ham nodded. Who else? They targeted you and Set. I guess your threat to kill Straff wasn't as binding as we assumed. How is Set? He barely escaped alive. As it is, they slaughtered half of his soldiers. In the fray, Damu and I couldn't even see what was happening up on the stage with you and Vin. Ellen nodded. By the time Ham had arrived, Vin had already dealt with the assassins. It had taken her only a few minutes to wipe out all 6 of them. Ham was silent for a moment. Finally, he turned to Ellen. I'll admit, El, he said quietly. I'm impressed. I didn't see the fight, but I saw the aftermath. It's one thing to fight 6 Allomancers, but it's another to do that while trying to protect a regular person and to keep any bystanders from harm. And that last man... Do you remember when she saved Breeze? Ellen asked. It was so far away, but I swear I saw her throw horses into the air with her allomancy. Have you ever heard of anything like that? Ham shook his head. Ellen sat quietly for a moment. I think we need to do some planning, but with today's events we can't... Ham looked up as Ellen trailed off. What? Messenger, Ellen said, nodding toward the doorway. Sure enough, the man presented himself to the soldiers, then was escorted up to the stage. Ellen stood, walking over to meet the short man, who wore Penrod's heraldry on his coat.
My lord, the man said, bowing. I've been sent to inform you that the voting will proceed at Lord Penrod's mansion.
The voting? Ham asked. What nonsense is this? His Majesty was nearly killed today.
I'm sorry, my lord, the aide said. I was simply told to deliver the message.
Ellen sighed. He'd hoped that, in the confusion, Penrod wouldn't remember the deadline. If they don't choose a new leader today, Ham, then I get to retain the crown. They've already wasted their grace period. Ham sighed. And if there are more assassins? He asked quietly. Vin will be laid up for a few days at least. I can't rely on her to protect me all the time, Ellen said. Let's go.
I vote for myself, Lord Penrod said.
Not unexpected, Ellen thought. He sat in Penrod's comfortable lounge, accompanied by a group of shaken assemblymen, none of whom, thankfully, had been hurt in the attack. Several held drinks, and there was a veritable army of guards waiting around the perimeter, eyeing each other warily. The crowded room also held Nurdin and 3 other scribes, who were there to witness the voting, according to the law.
I vote for Lord Penrod as well, said Lord Ducaylor.
Also not unexpected, Ellen thought. I wonder how much that cost Penrod. Mansion Penrod was not a keep, but it was lavishly decorated. The plushness of Ellen's chair was welcome as a relief from the tensions of the day. Yet Ellen feared that it was too soothing. It would be very easy to drift off.
"I vote for Set," said Lord Hebron.
Ellen perked up. It was the second for Set, which put him behind Penrod by 3. Everyone turned to Ellen.
"I vote for myself," he said, trying to project a firmness that was hard to maintain after everything that had happened.
The merchants were next. Ellen settled back, prepared for the expected run of votes for Set.
"I vote for Penrod," Phylon said.
Ellen sat upright, alert.
"What?"
The next merchant voted for Penrod as well, as did the next and the next. Ellen sat stunned, listening.
"What did I miss?" he thought.
He glanced at Ham, who shrugged in confusion. Phylon glanced at Ellen, smiling pleasantly. Ellen couldn't tell if there was bitterness or satisfaction in that look, however.
"They switched allegiances? That quickly?"
Phylon had been the one to sneak Set into the city in the first place. Ellen looked down the row of merchants, trying with little success to gauge their reactions. Set himself wasn't in the meeting. He had retreated to keep Hasting to nurse his wound.
"I vote for Lord Venture,"
said Hawes, foremost of the Ska faction. This also managed to get a stir out of the room. Hawes met Ellen's eye and nodded. He was a firm believer in the Church of the Survivor, and while the different preachers of the religion were beginning to disagree on how to organize their followers, they all agreed that a believer on the throne would be better for them than handing the city over to Set.
"There will be a price to pay for this allegiance," Ellen thought, as the Ska voted.
They knew Ellen's reputation for honesty, and he would not betray their trust. He had told them he would become an open member of their sect. He hadn't promised them belief, but he had promised them devotion. He still wasn't certain what he had given away, but both of them knew they would need each other.
"I vote for Penrod," said Jaston, a canal worker.
"And so do I,"
said Thertz, his brother. Ellen gritted his teeth. He'd known they would be trouble. They never had liked the Church of the Survivor. But 4 of the Ska had already given him their votes. With only 2 remaining, he had a very good shot at a deadlock.
"I vote for Venture,"
said the next man.
"I do too,"
said the final Ska. Ellen gave the man, Vet, a smile of appreciation. That left 15 votes for Penrod, 2 for Set, and 7 for Ellen. Deadlock. Ellen reclined slightly, head resting against the chair's pillowed back, sighing softly.
"You did your job, Vin," he thought. "I did mine. Now we just need to keep this country in one piece."
A voice asked. "Am I allowed to change my vote?"
Ellen opened his eyes. It was Lord Hebron, one of the votes for Set.
"I mean, it's obvious now that Set isn't going to win," Hebron said, flushing slightly.
The young man was a distant cousin of the Alarial family, which was probably how he'd gotten his seat. Names still meant power in Luthadel.
"I'm not sure if you can change or not," Lord Penrod said. "Well, I'd rather my vote meant something," Hebron said. "There are only 2 votes for Set, after all."
The room fell silent. One by one, the members of the assembly turned to Ellen. Nordin the scribe met Ellen's eyes. There was a clause allowing for men to change their votes, assuming that the Chancellor hadn't officially closed the voting, which, indeed, he hadn't. The clause was rather oblique. Nordin was probably the only other one in the room who knew the law well enough to interpret it. He nodded slightly, still meeting Ellen's eyes. He would hold his tongue. Ellen sat still in a room full of men who trusted him, even as they rejected him. He could do as Nordin did. He could say nothing, or could say that he didn't know.
"Yes," Ellen said softly. "The law allows for you to change your vote, Lord Hebron. You may only do so once, and must do so before the winner is declared. Everyone else has the same opportunity."
"Then I vote for Lord Penrod," Abram said.
"As do I," said Lord Hugh, the other who had voted for Set.
Elland closed his eyes.
"Are there any other alterations?" Lord Penrod asked. No one spoke.
"Then," Penrod said, "I see 17 votes for myself, 7 votes for Lord Venture. I officially close the voting and humbly accept your appointment as king. I shall serve as best I can in this capacity."
Elland stood, then slowly removed his crown. "Here," he said, setting it on the mantel. "You'll need this." He nodded to Ham, then left without looking back at the men who had discarded him. The end of part 3.
Part 4. Knives. "I know your argument. We speak of the anticipation, of things foretold, of promises made by our greatest prophets of old. Of course, the hero of ages will fit the prophecies. He will fit them perfectly. That's the idea."
39.
Straff Venture rode quietly in the misty twilight air. Though he would have preferred a carriage, he felt it important to travel by horseback and present a compelling image for the troops. Zane, not surprisingly, chose to walk. He sauntered along beside Straff's horse, the two of them leading a group of 50 soldiers. Even with the troops, Straff felt exposed. It wasn't just the mists, and it wasn't just the darkness. He could still remember her touch on his emotions.
"You failed me, Zane," Straff said.
The Mistborn looked up, and, burning tin, Straff could see a frown on his face.
"Failed?"
"Venture and Set still live. Beyond that, you sent a batch of my best allomancers to their deaths."
"I warned you that they might die," Zane said.
"For a purpose, Zane," Straff said sternly. "Why did you need a group of secret allomancers if you were just going to send them on a suicide mission in the middle of a public gathering? You may assume our resources may be unlimited, but let me assure you, those 6 men cannot be replaced."
It had taken Straff decades of work with his mistresses to gather so many hidden allomancers. It had been pleasurable work, but work all the same. In one reckless gambit, Zane had destroyed a good third of Straff's allomancer children.
"My children dead, our hand exposed, and that creature of Elland's still lives."
"I'm sorry, Father," Zane said. "I thought that the chaos and crowded quarters would keep the girl isolated and force her not to use coins. I really thought this would work."
Straff frowned. He well knew that Zane thought himself more competent than his father. What Mistborn wouldn't think such a thing? Only a delicate mixture of bribery, threats, and manipulation kept Zane under control. Yet no matter what Zane thought, Straff was no fool. He knew, at that moment, that Zane was hiding something.
"Why send those men to die?" Straff thought. "He must have intended them to fail. Otherwise he would have helped them fight the girl."
"No," Zane said softly, talking to himself as he sometimes did. "He's my father." He trailed off, then shook his head sharply. "No, not them either."
"Lord Ruler," Straff thought, looking down at the muttering madman beside him. "What have I gotten myself into?"
Zane was growing more unpredictable. Had he sent those men to die out of jealousy, out of lust for violence, or had he simply been bored? Straff didn't think that Zane had turned on him, but it was difficult to tell. Either way, Straff didn't like having to rely on Zane for his plans to work. He didn't really like having to rely on Zane for anything. Zane looked up at Straff and stopped talking. He did a good enough job of hiding his insanity, most of the time. A good enough job that Straff sometimes forgot about it. Yet it still lurked there, beneath the surface. Zane was as dangerous a tool as Straff had ever used. The protection provided by a Mistborn outweighed the danger of Zane's insanity. Barely.
"You needn't worry, Father," Zane said. "The city will still be yours."
"It will never be mine as long as that woman lives," Straff said.
He shivered. Perhaps that's what this was all about. Zane's attack was so obvious that everyone in the city knows I was behind it. And when that Mistborn demon wakes, she will come after me in retribution. But if that were Zane's goal, then why not just kill me himself?
Zane didn't make sense. He didn't have to. That was perhaps one of the advantages of being insane.
Zane shook his head.
"I think you will be surprised, Father. One way or another, you will soon have nothing to fear from Vin."
"She thinks I tried to have her beloved king assassinated."
Zane smiled.
"No, I don't think that she does. She's far too clever for that."
Too clever to see the truth, Straff thought. However, his tin-enhanced ears heard shuffling in the mists. He held up a hand, halting his procession. In the distance, he could just barely pick out the flickering blobs of wall-top torches. They were close to the city, uncomfortably close. Straff's procession waited quietly. Then, from the mists before them, a man on horseback appeared, accompanied by 50 soldiers of his own. Fersen Penrod.
"Straff," Penrod said, nodding.
"Fersen?"
"Your men did well," Penrod said. "I'm glad your son didn't have to die. He's a good lad, a bad king, but an earnest man."
"A lot of my sons died today, Fersen," Straff thought. "The fact that Elend still lives isn't fortunate, it's irony."
"You are ready to deliver the city?" Straff asked.
Penrod nodded.
"Phylan and his merchants want assurances that they will have titles to match those Set promised them."
Straff waved a dismissive hand.
"You know me, Fersen.
You used to practically grovel before me at parties every week."
"I always honor business agreements. I'd be an idiot not to appease those merchants. They're the ones who will bring me tax revenue from this dominance."
Penrod nodded.
"I'm glad we could come to an understanding, Straff. I don't trust Set."
"I doubt you trust me," Straff said.
Penrod smiled.
"But I do know you, Straff. You're one of us, a Luthadel nobleman. Besides, you have produced the most stable kingdom in the dominances. That's all we're looking for right now, a little stability for these people."
"You almost sound like that fool son of mine."
Penrod paused, then shook his head.
"Your son isn't a fool, Straff. He's just an idealist. In truth, I'm sad to see his little utopia fall."
"If you are sad for him, Fersen, then you are an idiot too."
Penrod stiffened. Straff caught the man's proud eyes, holding them with his stare until Penrod looked down. The exchange was a simple one, mostly meaningless, but it did serve as a very important reminder. Straff chuckled.
"You're going to have to get used to being a small fish again, Fersen."
"I know."
"Be cheerful," Straff said. "Assuming this turnover of power happens as you promised, no one will have to end up dead. Who knows? Maybe I'll let you keep that crown of yours."
Penrod looked up.
"For a long time, this land didn't have kings," Straff said quietly. "It had something greater. Well, I'm not the Lord Ruler, but I can be an emperor. You want to keep your crown and rule as a subject king under me?"
That depends on the cost, Straff, Penrod said carefully. Not completely quelled, then.
Penrod had always been clever. He'd been the most important nobleman to stay behind in Luthadel, and his gamble had certainly worked.
The cost is exorbitant, Straff said. Ridiculously so. The Atium, Penrod guessed.
Straff nodded.
Elland hasn't found it, but it's here, somewhere.
I was the one who mined those geodes. My men spent decades harvesting them and bringing them to Luthadel. I know how much of it we harvested, and I know that nowhere near the same amount came back out in disbursements to the nobility. The rest is in that city somewhere.
Penrod nodded.
I'll see what I can find, Straff.
Straff raised an eyebrow.
You need to get back into practice, Fersen.
Penrod paused, then bowed his head.
I'll see what I can find, my lord.
Good. Now, what news did you bring of Ellen's mistress?
She collapsed after the fight, Penrod said. I employ a spy on the cooking staff, and she said she delivered a bowl of broth to Lady Vin's room. It returned cold.
Straff frowned.
Could this woman of yours slip the Mistborn something?
Penrod paled slightly.
I don't think that would be wise, my lord. Besides, you know Mistborn constitutions.
Perhaps she really is incapacitated, Straff thought. If we moved in... The chill of her touch and his emotions returned. Numbness. Nothingness.
You needn't fear her so, my lord, Penrod said.
Straff raised an eyebrow.
I'm not afraid. I'm wary. I will not move into that city until my safety is assured. And until I move in, your city is in danger from Set. Or worse. What would happen if those Kolos decide to attack the city, Fersen? I'm in negotiations with their leader, and he seems to be able to control them. For now. Have you ever seen the aftermath of a Kolos slaughter?
He probably hadn't. Straff hadn't until just recently. Penrod just shook his head.
Vin won't attack you. Not if the Assembly votes to put you in command of the city. The transfer will be perfectly legal.
I doubt she cares about legality.
Perhaps, Penrod said. But Elland does. And where he commands, the girl follows.
Unless he has as little control over her as I have over Zane, Straff thought, shivering.
No matter what Penrod said, Straff wasn't going to take the city until that horrible creature was dealt with. In this, he could rely only on Zane. And that thought frightened him almost as much as Vin did. Without further discussion, Straff waved to Penrod, dismissing him. Penrod turned and retreated into the mists with his entourage. Even with his tin, Straff barely heard Zane land on the ground beside him. Straff turned, looking at the Mistborn.
"You really think he'd turn the Atium over to you if he found it?" Zane asked quietly.
"Perhaps," Straff said. "He has to know that he'd never be able to hold on to it. He doesn't have the military might to protect a treasure like that. And if he doesn't give it to me, well, it would probably be easier to take the Atium from him than it would be to find it on my own."
Straff seemed to find the answer satisfactory. He waited for a few moments, staring into the mists. Then he looked at Straff, a curious expression on his face.
"What time is it?"
Straff checked his pocket watch, something no Mistborn would carry. Too much metal.
11:17, he said.
Zane nodded, turning back to look at the city.
"It should have taken effect by now."
Straff frowned. Then he began to sweat. He flared tin, clamping his eyes shut.
"There," he thought, noticing a weakness inside of him. "More poison?"
he asked, keeping the fear from his voice, forcing himself to be calm.
"How do you do it, father?" Zane asked. "I thought for certain you'd missed this one. Yet here you are, just fine."
Straff was beginning to feel weak.
"One doesn't need to be mistborn to be capable, Zane," he snapped.
Zane shrugged, smiling in the haunting way only he could, keenly intelligent yet eerily unstable. Then he just shook his head.
"You win again," he said,
then shot upward into the sky, churning mists with his passing. Straff immediately turned his horse, trying to maintain his decorum as he urged it back toward the camp. He could feel the poison, feel it stealing his life, feel it threatening him, overcoming him. He went, perhaps too quickly. It was difficult to maintain an air of strength when you were dying. Finally, he broke into a gallop. He left his startled guards behind, and they called in surprise, breaking into a jog to try and keep up. Straff ignored their complaints. He kicked the horse faster. Could he feel the poison slowing his reactions? Which one had Zane used? Gurraith? No, it required injection. Tomfer, perhaps, or... perhaps he had found one that Straff didn't even know about. He could only hope that wasn't the case, for if Straff didn't know of the poison, then Amaranta probably wouldn't know of it either, and wouldn't be able to put the antidote into her catch-all healing potion. The lights of camp illuminated the mists. Soldiers cried out as Straff approached, and he was nearly run through as one of his own men leveled a spear at the charging horse. Fortunately, the man recognized him in time. Straff rode the man down even as he turned aside his spear. Straff charged right up to his tent. By now, his men were scattering, preparing as if for an invasion or some other attack. There was no way he could hide this from Zane.
"I wouldn't be able to hide my death, either."
"My lord," a captain said, dashing up to him.
"Send for Amaranta," Straff said, stumbling off his horse.
The soldier paused.
"The mistress, lord?" the man said, frowning. "Why?"
"Now!"
Straff commanded, throwing back his tent flap, walking inside. He paused, legs trembling as the tent flap closed. He wiped his brow with a hesitant hand. Too much sweat.
"Damn him," he thought with frustration. "I have to kill him, contain him. I have to do something. I can't rule like this."
But what? He'd sat up nights, he'd wasted days trying to decide what to do about Zane. The atrium he used to bribe the man no longer seemed a good motivator. Zane's actions this day, slaughtering Straff's children in an obviously hopeless attempt to kill Ellen's mistress, proved that he could no longer be trusted even in a small way. Amaranta arrived with surprising speed, and she immediately began mixing her antidote. Eventually, as Straff slipped down the horrid-tasting concoction, feeling its healing effects immediately, he came to an uneasy conclusion. Zane had to die.
"And yet, something about all this seemed so convenient. It felt almost as if we constructed a hero to fit our prophecies, rather than allowing one to arise naturally. This was the worry I had, the thing that should have given me pause, when my brethren came to me, finally willing to believe."
40. Elland sat beside her bed. That comforted her. Though she slept fitfully, a piece of her knew that he was there, watching over her. It felt odd to be beneath his protective care, for she was the one who usually did the guarding. So when she finally woke, she wasn't surprised to find him in the chair beside her bed, reading quietly by soft candlelight. As she came fully awake, she didn't jump up or search the room with apprehension. Instead, she sat up slowly, pulling the blanket up under her arms, then took a sip of the water that had been left for her beside the bed. Elland closed the book and turned toward her, smiling. Vin searched those soft eyes, delving for hints of the horror she had seen before. The disgust, the terror, the shock. He knew her for a monster. How could he smile so kindly?
"Why?"
she asked quietly.
"Why what?" he asked.
"Why wait here?" she said. "I'm not dying. I remember that much."
Ellen shrugged.
"I just wanted to be near you."
She said nothing.
A coal stove burned in the corner, though it needed more fuel. Winter was close, and it was looking to be a cold one. She wore only a nightgown. She'd asked the maids not to put one on her, but by then Sacid's draft, to help her sleep, had already begun taking effect, and she hadn't had the energy to argue. She pulled the blanket closer. Only then did she realize something she should have noticed earlier.
"Elland, you're not wearing your uniform."
He looked down at his clothing. A nobleman's suit from his old wardrobe, with an unbuttoned maroon vest. The jacket was too big for him. He shrugged.
"No need to continue the charade anymore, Vin."
"Set is king?" she asked with a sinking feeling.
Elland shook his head.
"Penrod."
"That doesn't make sense."
"I know," he said. "We aren't sure why the merchants betrayed Set, but it doesn't really matter anymore. Penrod is a far better choice anyway, than either Set or me."
"You know that's not true."
Ellen sat back contemplatively.
"I don't know, Vin. I thought I was the better man. Yet while I thought up all kinds of schemes to keep the throne from Set, I never really considered the one plan that would have been certain to defeat him. That of giving my support to Penrod, combining our votes. What if my arrogance had landed us with Set? I wasn't thinking of the people."
"Elland," she said, laying a hand on his arm.
And he flinched. It was slight, almost unnoticeable, and he covered it quickly. But the damage was done. Damage she had caused. Damage within him. He had finally seen, really seen, what she was. He'd fallen in love with a lie.
"What?" he said, looking into her face.
"Nothing," Vin said.
She withdrew her hand. Inside, something cracked.
"I love him so much. Why? Why did I let him see? If only I'd had a choice."
"He's betraying you,"
Rean's voice whispered in the back of her mind.
"Everyone will leave you eventually, Vin."
Ellen sighed, glancing toward the shutters to her room. They were closed, keeping the mists out, though Vin could see the darkness beyond.
"The thing is, Vin," he said quietly, "I never really thought it would end this way. I trusted them right to the end. The people, the assemblymen they chose, I trusted that they would do the right thing. When they didn't choose me, I was actually surprised. I shouldn't have been. We knew that I was the long shot. I mean, they had already voted me out once. But I'd convinced myself that was just a warning. Inside, in my heart, I thought that they would reinstate me."
He shook his head.
"Now I either have to admit that my faith in them was wrong, or I have to trust in their decision."
That was what she loved. His goodness. His simple honesty. Things as odd and exotic to a Ska urchin as her own mistborn nature must be to most people. Even among all the good men of Kelsier's crew, even amid the best of the nobility, she had never found another man like Elland Venture. A man who would rather believe that the people who had dethroned him were just trying to do the right thing. At times she had felt a fool for falling in love with the first nobleman whom she grew to know. But now she realized that her love of Elland had not come about because of simple convenience or proximity. It had come because of who Elland was. The fact that she had found him first was an event of incredible fortune. And now, it was over. At least in the form it had once had. But she'd known all along that it would turn out this way.
That was why she'd refused his marriage proposal, now over a year old. She couldn't marry him. Or rather, she couldn't let him marry her.
"I know that sorrow in your eyes, Vin," Elland said softly. She looked at him with shock.
"We can get past this," he said. "The throne wasn't everything. We might be better off this way, actually. We did our best. Now it's someone else's turn to try."
She smiled wanly. "He doesn't know. He must never know how much this hurts. He's a good man. He'd try to force himself to keep loving me."
"But," he said, "you should get some more rest."
"I feel fine," Vin said, stretching slightly. Her side hurt and her neck ached, but pewter burned within her, and none of her wounds were debilitating. "I need to..." She cut herself off as a realization hit her. She sat upright, the sudden motion making her rigid with pain. The day before was a blur, but...
"Osir,"
she said, pushing aside the blanket.
"He's fine, Vin," Ellen said. "He's a Chandra. Broken bones mean nothing to him."
She paused, half out of bed, suddenly feeling foolish.
"Where is he?"
"Digesting a new body," Ellen said, smiling.
"Why the smile?" she asked.
"I've just never heard someone express that much concern for a Chandra before."
"Well, I don't see why not," Vin said, climbing back in bed. "Orsio risked his life for me."
"He's a Chandra, Vin," Ellen repeated. "I don't think those men could have killed him. I doubt even a Mistborn could."
Vin paused. "Not even a Mistborn could." What bothered her about that statement?
"Regardless," she said, "he feels pain. He took two serious blows on my behalf."
"Just fulfilling his contract."
His contract. Orsure had attacked a human. He had broken his contract. For her.
"What?" Ellen asked.
"Nothing," Vin said quickly. "Tell me about the armies."
Ellen eyed her, but allowed the conversation to change directions.
"Set is still holed up in Keep Hasting. We're not sure what his reaction will be. The Assembly didn't choose him, which can't be good. And yet he hasn't protested. He has to realize that he's trapped in here now."
"He must have really believed that we'd choose him," Vin said, frowning. "Why else would he come into the city?"
Ellen shook his head. "It was an odd move in the first place. Anyway, I have advised the Assembly to try and make a deal with him. I think he believes that the Atium isn't in the city, so there's really no reason for him to want Luthadel."
"Except for the prestige."
"Which wouldn't be worth losing his army," Ellen said. "Or his life."
Vin nodded. "And your father?"
"Silent," Ellen said. "It's strange, Vin. This isn't like him. Those assassins were so blatant. I'm not sure what to make of them."
"The assassins," Vin said, sitting back in the bed. "You've identified them?"
Ellen shook his head. "Nobody recognizes them."
Vin frowned.
"Maybe we aren't as familiar with the noblemen out in the Northern Dominance as we thought we were."
"No," Vin thought. "No, if they were from a city as close as Orto, Straff's home, some of them would be known, wouldn't they?" "I thought I recognized one of them," Vin finally said.
"Which one?"
"The last one."
Ellen paused. "Ah, well, I guess we won't be able to identify him now."
"Ellen, I'm sorry you had to see that."
"What?" Ellen asked. "Vin, I've seen death before. I was forced to attend the Lord Ruler's executions, remember?" He paused. "Not that what you did was like that, of course."
"Of course."
"You were amazing," Ellen said. "I'd be dead right now if you hadn't stopped those Allomancers, and it's likely that Penrod and the other Assemblymen would have fared the same.
You saved the central dominance.
We always have to be the knives.
Elland smiled, standing.
Here, he said, walking to the side of the room. This is cold, but Sazed said you should eat it when you awoke.
He returned with a bowl of broth.
Sazed sent it?
Vin asked skeptically.
Drugged, then?
Elland smiled.
He warned me not to taste it myself. He said it was filled with enough sedatives to knock me out for a month. It takes a lot to affect you pewter burners.
He set the bowl on the bedstand. Vin eyed it through narrowed eyes. Sazed was probably worried that, despite her wounds, she'd go out and prowl the city if she were left on her own. He was probably right. With a sigh, Vin accepted the bowl and began to sip at it. Elland smiled.
I'll send someone to bring you more coal for the stove, he said. There are some things I need to do.
Vin nodded and he left, pulling the door shut behind him.
When Vin next awoke, she saw that Elland was still there. He stood in the shadows, watching her. It was still dark outside. The shutters to her window were open, and mist coated the floor of the room. The shutters were open.
Vin sat upright and turned toward the figure in the corner. It wasn't Elland.
Zane, she said flatly.
He stepped forward. It was so easy to see the similarities between him and Elland, now that she knew what to look for. They had the same jaw, the same wavy dark hair. They even had similar builds, now that Elland had been exercising.
You sleep too soundly, Zane said. Even a Mistborn's body needs sleep to heal. You shouldn't have been hurt in the first place, Zane said. You should have been able to kill those men with ease. But you were distracted by my brother, and by trying to keep the people of the room from harm. This is what he's done to you. He's changed you, so that you no longer see what needs to be done. You just see what he wants you to do.
Vin raised an eyebrow, quietly feeling beneath her pillow. Her dagger was there, fortunately.
He didn't kill me in my sleep, she thought. That has to be a good sign.
He took another step forward. She tensed.
What is your game, Zane? She said. First you tell me that you've decided not to kill me, then you send a group of assassins. What now? Have you come to finish the job? We didn't send those assassins, Vin, Zane said quietly.
Vin snorted.
Believe as you wish, Zane said, taking another step forward so that he stood right beside her bed, a tall figure of blackness and solemnity.
But my father is still terrified of you. Why would he risk retribution by trying to kill Elland?
It was a gamble, Vin said. He hoped those assassins would kill me.
Why use them? Zane asked. He has me. Why use a bunch of mistings to attack you in the middle of a crowded room, when he could just have me use Atium in the night and kill you?
Vin hesitated.
Vin, he said, I watched the corpses being carried away from the assembly hall, and I recognized some of them from Set's entourage.
That's it, Vin thought. That's where I saw that thug whose face I smashed. He was at Keep Hasting, peeking out from the kitchen while we ate with Set, pretending to be a servant.
But the assassins attacked Set, too,
Vin trailed off. It was basic thieving strategy. If you had a front that you wanted to escape suspicion as you burgled the shops around it, you made certain to steal from yourself as well.
The assassins who attacked Set were all normal men, Vin said. No allomancers. I wonder what he told them, that they'd be allowed to surrender once the battle turned? But why fake an attack in the first place? He was favored for the throne.
Zane shook his head.
Penrod made a deal with my father, Vin. Straff offered the assembly wealth beyond anything Set could provide.
That's why the merchants changed their votes. Set must have gotten wind of their betrayal. He has spies enough in the city.
Vin sat dumbfounded.
Of course.
And the only way that Set could see to win was to send the assassins, Zane said with a nod. They were to attack all three candidates, killing Penrod and Elland, but leaving Set alive. The assembly would assume that they'd been betrayed by Straff, and Set would become king.
Vin gripped her knife with a shaking hand. She was growing tired of games. Elland had almost died. She had almost failed. Part of her, a burning part, wanted to do what she'd first been inclined to go out and kill Set and Straff, to remove the danger the most efficient way possible.
No, she told herself forcefully. No, that was Kelsier's way. It's not my way. It's not Ellen's way.
Zane turned away, facing toward her window, staring at the small, waterfall-like flow of mist spilling through.
I should have arrived sooner to the fight. I was outside with the crowds that came too late to get a seat. I didn't even know what was happening until the people started piling out.
Vin raised an eyebrow.
You almost sound sincere, Zane. I have no wish to see you dead, he said, turning. And I certainly don't want to see harm befall Elland.
Oh? Vin asked. Even though he's the one who had all the privileges, while you were despised and kept locked away?
Zane shook his head. It isn't like that. Elland is pure. Sometimes, when I hear him speak, I wonder if I would have become like him, if my childhood had been different.
He met her eyes in the dark room.
I'm broken, Vin. Maddened. I can never be like Elland. But killing him won't change me. It's probably best that he and I were raised apart. It's far better that he doesn't know about me. Better that he remain as he is. Untainted.
Vin floundered. What could she say? She could see actual sincerity in Zane's eyes.
I'm not Elland, Zane said. I never will be. I'm not a part of his world. But I don't think that I should be. Neither should you. After the fighting was done, I finally got into the assembly hall. I saw Elland standing over you at the end. I saw the look in his eyes.
She turned away.
It's not his fault that he is what he is, Zane said. As I said, he's pure. But that makes him different from us. I've tried to explain it to you. I wish you could have seen that look in his eyes.
I saw it, Vin thought. She didn't want to remember it, but she had seen it. That awful look of horror. A reaction to something terrible and alien. Something beyond understanding.
I can't be Elland, Zane said quietly. But you don't want me to be.
He reached over and dropped something on her bedstand.
Next time, be prepared.
Vin snatched the object as Zane began to walk toward the window. The ball of metal rolled in her palm. The shape was bumpy, but the texture was smooth, like a nugget of gold. She knew it without having to swallow it.
Atium.
Set may send other assassins, Zane said, hopping up onto the windowsill.
You're giving it to me? She asked.
There's enough here for a good 2 minutes of burning.
It was a small fortune, easily worth 20,000 boxings before the collapse. Now, with the scarcity of Atium... Zane turned back toward her.
"Just keep yourself safe," he said, then launched himself out into the mists.
Vin did not like being injured. Logically, she knew that other people probably felt the same way. After all, who would enjoy pain and debilitation? Yet when the others got sick, she sensed frustration from them, not terror. When sick, Ellen would spend the day in bed reading books. Clubs had taken a bad blow during practice several months before, and he had grumbled about the pain, but had stayed off his leg for a few days without much prodding. Vin was growing to be more like them. She could lie in bed as she did now, knowing that nobody would try to slit her throat while she was too weak to call for help. Still, she itched to rise, to show that she wasn't very badly wounded. Lest someone think otherwise, and try to take advantage.
"It isn't like that anymore," she told herself.
It was light outside, and though Ellen had been back to visit several times, he was currently away. Sazed had come to check on her wounds, and had begged for her to stay in bed for at least one more day. Then he'd gone back to his studies. With Tyndall.
"Whatever happened to those two hating each other?" she thought with annoyance. "I'd barely get to see him."
Her door opened. Vin was pleased that her instincts were still keen enough that she immediately grew tense, reaching for her daggers. Her pained side protested the sudden motion. Nobody entered. Vin frowned, still tense, until a canine head popped up over the top of her footboard.
"Mistress," said a familiar half-growl of a voice.
"Monsieur," Vin said. "You're wearing another dog's body."
"Of course, mistress," Orsieur said, hopping up onto the bed. "What else would I have?"
"I don't know," Vin said, putting away her daggers. "When Ellen said you'd had him get you a body, I just assumed that you'd asked for a human. I mean, everyone saw my dog die."
"Yes," Orsieur said. "But it will be simple to explain that you got a new animal. You are expected to have a dog with you now, and so not having one would provoke notice."
Vin sat quietly. She'd changed back to trousers and shirt despite Sazed's protests. Her dresses hung in the other room, one noticeably absent. At times, when she looked at them, she thought she saw the gorgeous white gown hanging there, sprayed with blood. Tyndall had been wrong. Vin couldn't be both Mistborn and Lady. The horror she had seen in the eyes of the Assemblyman were enough proof for her.
"You didn't need to take a dog's body, Orsieur," Vin said quietly. "I'd rather that you were happy."
"It is all right, mistress," Orsieur said. "I have grown fond of these kinds of bones. I should like to explore their advantages a little more before I return to human ones."
Vin smiled. He'd chosen another wolfhound, a big brute of a beast. The colorings were different, more black than gray without any patches of white. She approved.
"Monsieur," Vin said, looking away, "thank you for what you did for me."
"I fulfill my contract."
"I've been in other fights," Vin said. "You never intervened in those."
Orsieur didn't answer immediately.
"No, I didn't."
"Why this time?"
"I did what felt right, mistress," Orsieur said.
"Even if it contradicted the contract?"
Orsieur sat up proudly on his haunches.
"I did not break my contract," he said firmly.
"But you attacked a human."
"I didn't kill him," Orsieur said. "We are cautioned to stay out of combat lest we accidentally cause a human death. Indeed, most of my brethren think that helping someone kill is the same as killing, and feel it is a breach of the contract. The words are distinct, however. I did nothing wrong.
And if that man you tackled had broken his neck?
Then I would have returned to my kind for execution, Orsir said.
Vin smiled. Then you did risk your life for me.
In a small way, I suppose, Orsir said. The chances of my actions directly causing that man's death were slim.
Thank you anyway. Orsir bowed his head in acceptance. Executed, Vin said. So you can be killed?
Of course, mistress, Orsir said. We aren't immortal.
Vin eyed him.
I will say nothing specific, mistress, Orsir said. As you might imagine, I would rather not reveal the weaknesses of my kind. Please suffice it to say that they exist.
Vin nodded, but frowned in thought, bringing her knees up to her chest. Something was still bothering her, something about what Elend had said earlier, something about Orsir's actions.
But, she said slowly, you couldn't have been killed by swords or staves, right?
Correct, Orsir said. Though our flesh looks like yours, and though we feel pain, beating us has no permanent effect.
Then why are you afraid? Vin said, finally lighting upon what was bothering her.
Mistress?
Why did your people make the contract? Vin asked. Why subjugate yourselves to mankind? If our soldiers couldn't hurt you, then why even worry about us?
You have allomancy, Orsir said.
So allomancy can kill you?
No, Orsir said, shaking his canine head. It cannot. But perhaps we should change the topic. I'm sorry, mistress. This is very dangerous ground for me.
I understand, Vin said, sighing. It's just so frustrating. There's so much I don't know. About the deepness, about the legal politics, even about my own friends. She sat back, looking up at the ceiling. And there's still a spy in the palace, Demu or Doxin likely. Maybe I should just order them both taken and held for a time. Would Elend even do such a thing? Orsir was watching her, apparently noting her frustration. Finally he sighed.
Perhaps there are some things I can speak of, mistress, if I am careful. What do you know of the origin of the Chandra?
Vin perked up. Nothing.
We did not exist before the Ascension, he said.
You mean to say that the Lord Ruler created you?
That is what our lore teaches, Orsir said. We are not certain of our purpose. Perhaps we were to be Father's spies.
Father, Vin said. It seems strange to hear him spoken of that way.
The Lord Ruler created us, mistress, Orsir said. We are his children.
And I killed him, Vin said. I feel like I should apologize.
Just because he is our father does not mean we accepted everything he did, mistress, Orsir said. Cannot a human man love his father, yet not believe he is a good person?
I suppose.
Chandra theology about father is complex, Orsir said. Even for us it is difficult to sort through it sometimes.
Vin frowned. Orsir, how old are you?
Old, he said simply.
Older than Kelsier?
Much, Orsir said. But not as old as you are thinking. I do not remember the Ascension.
Vin nodded. Why tell me all of this?
Because of your original question, mistress. Why do we serve the contract? Well, tell me. If you were the Lord Ruler and had his power, would you have created servants without building into them a way that you could control them?
Vin nodded slowly in understanding.
Father took little thought of the Chondra from about the 2nd century after his ascension, Orsir said. We tried to be independent for a time, but it was as I explained. Humankind resented us, feared us, and some of them knew of our weaknesses. When my ancestors considered their options, they eventually chose voluntary servitude as opposed to forced slavery.
He created them, Vin thought. She had always shared a bit of Kelsier's view regarding the Lord Ruler, that he was more man than deity. But if he'd truly created a completely new species, then there had to have been some divinity in him.
The power of the Well of Ascension, she thought. He took it for himself. But it didn't last. It must have run out, and quickly. Otherwise, why would he have needed armies to conquer?
An initial burst of power, the ability to create, to change, perhaps to save. He'd pushed back the mists, and in the process he'd somehow made the ash begin to fall and the sky turn red. He'd created the Chondra to serve him, and probably the Koloss too. He might even have created Allomancers themselves. And after that, he had returned to being a normal man. Mostly. The Lord Ruler had still held an inordinate amount of power for an Allomancer, and had managed to keep control of his creations. And he had somehow kept the mists from killing. Until Vin had slain him. Then the Koloss had begun to rampage and the mists had returned. The Chondra hadn't been beneath his control at that time, so they remained as they were. But he built into them a method of control, should he need it. A way to make the Chondra serve him. Vin closed her eyes and quested out lightly with her allomantic senses. Orsir had said that Chondra couldn't be affected by allomancy. But she knew something else about the Lord Ruler, something that had distinguished him from other allomancers. His inordinate power had allowed him to do things he shouldn't have been able to. Things like pierce copper clouds and affect metals inside of a person's body. Maybe that was how he controlled the Chondra, the thing that Orsir was speaking of. The reason they feared Mistborn. Not because Mistborn could kill them, but because Mistborn could do something else. Enslave them somehow. Tentatively, testing what he'd said earlier, Vin reached out with a soothing and touched Orsir's emotions. Nothing happened.
I can do some of the same things as the Lord Ruler, she thought. I can pierce copper clouds. Perhaps if I just push harder...
She focused and pushed on his emotions with a powerful soothing. Again, nothing happened, just as he'd told her. She sat for a moment. And then, impulsively, she burned Duralumin and tried one final massive push. Orsir immediately let out a howl so bestial and unexpected that Vin jumped to her feet in shock, flaring pewter. Orsir fell to the bed, shaking.
Orsir,
she said, dropping to her knees, grabbing his head.
I'm sorry.
Said too much, he muttered, still shaking. I knew I'd said too much.
I didn't mean to hurt you, Vin said.
The shaking subsided, and Orsir fell still for a moment, breathing quietly. Finally, he pulled his head out of her arms.
What you meant is immaterial, mistress, he said flatly. The mistake was mine. Please never do that again.
I promise, she said. I'm sorry.
He shook his head, crawling off the bed.
You shouldn't even have been able to do it. There are strange things about you, mistress. You are like the Allomancers of old, before the passage of generations dulled their powers.
I'm sorry,
Vin said again, feeling helpless.
He saved my life. Nearly broke his contract, and I'd do this to him.
Orsir shrugged.
It is done. I need to rest. I suggest that you do the same. After that,
I began to see other problems.
41. I write this record now, Sazed read out loud, pounding it into a metal slab, because I am afraid. Afraid for myself, yes. I admit to being human. If Alendi does return from the Well of Ascension, I am certain that my death will be one of his first objectives. He is not an evil man, but he is a ruthless one. That is, I think, a product of what he has been through.
That fits what we know of Alendi from the logbook, Tyndall said, assuming that Alendi is that author's book.
Sazed glanced at his pile of notes, running over the basics in his mind. Quan had been an ancient Terrace scholar. He had discovered Alendi, a man he began to think, through his studies, might be the hero of ages, a figure from Terrace prophecy. Alendi had listened to him, and had become a political leader. He had conquered much of the world, then traveled north to the Well of Ascension. By then, however, Quan had apparently changed his mind about Alendi, and had tried to stop him from getting to the well. It fit together. Even though the logbook author never mentioned his own name, it was obvious that he was Alendi.
It is a very safe assumption, I think, Sazed said. The logbook even speaks of Quan, and the falling out they had.
They sat beside each other in Sazed's rooms. He had requested and received a larger desk to hold their multitudinous notes and scribbled theories. Beside the door sat the remnants of their afternoon meal, a soup they had hurriedly gulped down. Sazed itched to take the dishes down to the kitchens, but he hadn't been able to pull himself away yet.
Continue,
Tyndall requested, sitting back in her chair, looking more relaxed than Sazed had ever seen her. The rings running down the sides of her ears alternated in color, a gold or copper followed by a tin or iron. It was such a simple thing, but there was a beauty to it.
Sazed?
Sazed started.
I apologize, he said,
then turned back to his reading. I am also afraid, however, that I have known that my story will be forgotten. I am afraid for the world that may come. Afraid because my plans failed. Afraid of a doom brought by the deepness.
Wait, Tyndall said. Why did he fear that?
Why would he not? Sazed asked. The deepness, which we assume is the mist, was killing his people. Without sunlight, their crops would not grow, and their animals could not graze.
But if Quan feared the deepness, then he should not have opposed Alendi, Tyndall said. He was climbing to the Well of Ascension to defeat the deepness.
Yes, Sazed said. But by then Quan was convinced that Alendi wasn't the hero of ages.
But why would that matter? Tyndall said. It didn't take a specific person to stop the mists. Rashik's success proves that. Here, skip to the end. Read that passage about Rashik.
I have a young nephew, one Rashik, Sazed read. He hates all of Hellenium with the passion of envious youth. He hates Alendi even more acutely, though the two have never met. For Rashik feels betrayed that one of our oppressors should have been chosen as the hero of ages. Alendi will need guides through the Terrace Mountains. I have charged Rashik with making certain that he and his trusted friends are chosen as those guides. Rashik is to try and lead Alendi in the wrong direction, to discourage him or otherwise foil his quest. Alendi won't know that he has been deceived. If Rashik fails to lead Alendi astray, then I have instructed the lad to kill my former friend. It is a distant hope. Alendi has survived assassins, wars, and catastrophes. And yet I hope that in the frozen mountains of Terrace, he may finally be exposed. I hope for a miracle. Alendi must not reach the Well of Ascension. He must not take the power for himself. Tyndall sat back, frowning.
What? Something is wrong there, I think, she said. But I cannot tell you precisely what.
Sazed scanned the text again.
Let us break it down to simple statements, then. Rashik,
the man who became the Lord Ruler, was Quan's nephew.
Yes, Tyndall said.
Quan sent Rashik to mislead or even kill his once friend, Alendi the Conqueror, a man climbing the mountains of Terrace to seek the Well of Ascension.
Tyndall nodded.
Quan did this because he feared what would happen if Alendi took the well's power for himself.
Tyndall raised a finger.
Why did he fear that? It seems a rational fear, I think, Sazed said.
Too rational, Tyndall replied. Or rather, perfectly rational. But tell me, Sazed, when you read Elendi's logbook, did you get the impression that he was the type who would take that power for himself?
Sazed shook his head. Actually, the opposite. That is part of what made the logbook so confusing. We couldn't figure out why the man represented within would have done as we assumed he must have. I think that is part of what eventually led Vin to guess that the Lord Ruler wasn't Alendi at all, but Rashik, his pack-man.
And Quan says that he knew Alendi well, Tyndall said. In fact, in this very rubbing, he compliments the man on several occasions. Calls him a good person, I believe.
Yes, Sazed said, finding the passage.
He is a good man. Despite it all, he is a good man. A sacrificing man. In truth, all of his actions, all of the deaths, destructions, and pains that he has caused, have hurt him deeply.
So, Quan knew Alendi well, Tyndall said, and thought highly of him. He also, presumably, knew his nephew Rashik well. Do you see my problem?
Sazed nodded slowly.
Why send a man of wild temperament, one whose motivations are based on envy and hatred, to kill a man you thought to be good and of worthy temperament? It does seem an odd choice.
Exactly, Tyndall said, resting her arms on the table.